It's time for building the game with Jason and friends from Tabletop Game Design. The fun never ends. It's at the end of the episode. That's
when it technically ends.
Hello. That's going to be gorgeous.
That was take two.
Take two. Jason, cut that part out.
No, he won't, though. He'll put that
I know.
On.
He's going to keep it. Hello.
Jason, cut that part out. Don't. No,
dude. Hello, and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is March 25th, and you are listening to episode 617. I am your fearless co-host, Emily Vincent, here today with a bunch of people at Unpub Prime in Baltimore, Maryland. So I'm not going to introduce folks. I'm going to have them go around the circle and tell you who's here. So everyone, if we could just get a hey, who you are, and I'd love to hear, what is your go-to meeple color when you play a game? Pointing at you.
Oh, cool. Hi, I'm David Masnado. And then favorite color, right?
Favorite color.
I've already forgotten. Oh, my God.
It is 8:30 in the morning, people. We are doing
so
this.
So early.
So great.
Favorite player color is yellow.
Everyone is shocked.
Yeah, that's probably deeply surprising.
Robbie Bergstrom, I think my favorite color officially is blue, but as far as what meeple, I don't like to focus, like, have one I always go to, so I kind of, like, look at the board and see, like, what color works with this game, what do I like? I don't know, it's per game.
Mm.
That's
so
interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice, I like that.
Hello, it's Roscoe Shock. My answer is kind of weird and not interesting. My favorite color is the one nobody else wants.
Useful, though.
Yes, we all need that person.
This is a psychological game you're playing right there.
So. I'm Zoe, and my favorite color is all of them. Because through hierarchies, I like them all.
I like it. And I'm Emily, and I go to pink, but there's almost never pink. And then I go to purple, but there's almost never purple. And then I go to green.
I just want to say my game has purple. So.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I've gotten a lot of comments that Pirates has orange, and people are very grateful to see orange at times.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of orange.
Orange is awesome.
Yeah. So I was hoping we could talk about sort of why are you here? Why'd you come to Unpub? What were your goals and dreams coming to Unpub?
Well, I really wanted to go to Unpub because I had some stuff that was in dire need of unguided testing. And I have pretty much exhausted all of the regulars I test with online. So I really needed to come to Unpub and get some fresh meat. but also, as a bonus, I get to hang out with all my friends.
Woo! Yeah, I mean, obviously coming and hanging out with everyone is a key part of it. I think the other thing that I was specifically looking forward to is Clarence and I are working on a social deduction game. And so we've gotten a lot of 5 and 6 player play tests, but it's really, really hard to get 7, 8, and 9 that you kind of need to test the higher end of a social deduction game. And so we are really hoping that we could get a bunch of kind of like higher player count social deduction tests done here with a lot of like people who are pretty into the genre. Like you can obviously have your family, but if they're not really into the genre, that's not going to help very much. So yeah, that was one of the key things that I was hoping to accomplish.
Did you get it done?
We did. Yeah, we had, I think we ran an 8 and 3 7s. So that was, it was great to be able to get some of the higher counts in.
Nice. I usually just dive bomb these things, which I have to apologize for. I'd love to like spend multiple nights and many days doing this, but yeah, I just swing in and play some games and maybe someone takes a look at mine. But I did accomplish in a way. I think I came here last year with my box of things that was like approximating a game and take a look at this, you know, with no cards or anything, and got good feedback where it's just like, sure, it's a game, finish it, and you know, and I'm like, okay. So yeah, I came back and now the feedback is great, it's a game, you know, regardless of whatever the opinion of it is, that's what is the goal. Do I have a game? And okay, I have a game. Now I need to write the rules down, like finalize it, and I need to start getting unguided play tests and sending it off to people, and yeah, so that's where I'm at, and mission accomplished.
Nice. Yeah, I think my main goals going into this is my game Tears of Joy is feeling like it's in a really good place, but there's a few things like scoring things and just complexity things that I wanted to make sure are feeling right for this game. It's been feeling like it needed just one more small thing, and pinning what that is down has been kind of challenging. So like a really cool few moments that came out of this that I wasn't planning on getting but was really useful data was I got in two tests with kids. And that was really helpful. I can't remember, are we doing a question that's about like insights and stuff? Well, then I'll come back to that. But
it's okay, you can jump ahead.
No, I'll come back to that conversation. But like just like getting that game into like a really good usability place.
Nice. Yeah, I came with too much agenda, probably. I've got two games that I just wanted to get a bunch of playtesting on, sort of back-to-back, try, tweak, see how it goes. So Pirates of the High Tees and Knitting Circle got a lot of testing. I brought too many games, and I think I'm going to spend some of today getting some of my newer stuff to the table, because I'm feeling a little like I've been playing all the games that I've been working on for like a year, and I'd love to move some of the newer ones forward. I did have a goal of getting an unguided playtest of Pirates, and that has not happened. But I think that getting the big part of getting a bunch of plays of Pirates and Knitting Circle was getting non-designers to play them as well, which has been a little bit harder. And so I think I got a bunch of that accomplished. But yes, it was also just to see all of you wonderful people, because it's just fun to hang out with you all. So yeah, I think I was hoping we could talk about, were there any like highlights of the weekend, good moments, panels, happenstance in the hall, run-ins, anybody want
to? I got a couple of tattoos.
Sweet. Yeah. Talk about those.
Well, they washed off, so they weren't that serious.
No, someone, Zach in the corner with his game, Sick Tat, I think
Sink
it was.
Ink. Sick Ink.
Yes. Yeah. No, that was entertaining. We just drawing tattoos on each other with washable ink, and much fun was had. So yeah, that was the highlight for me.
That was also one of my highlights. I got a really sweet coffin flame tattoo.
Nice coffin flame.
So the way this game works is you have a set of words, kind of like code names, and someone picks two of them, and they have to draw that on your arm or somewhere on your body, and you aren't looking, and you have to try and guess which two words they drew your tattoo on you. So it was very fun. I drew a bomb devil, which was excellent, and then we had a good convo with Zach about he might sort of print and play it or make 100 or something like that, because he was trying to figure out what to do with it next. But anyway, not to hijack your fun moment, that was a very fun. That was a very fun little game, if you don't mind being drawn on
right
by your friend and being touched.
And that was the whole discussion, like what. Send this game down to the beach where everyone's already in and half naked. And
yeah. I was like, I feel like this would land in fraternities,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll jump in. So one of the games I had here and I ran during my block on Friday night was Mondrian. So Mondrian's like a flip and write game where you make art in the style of Mondrian. And so it's a little bit like a kind of patchwork doodle kind of thing where you're trying to fill up a space, but in this case it's a canvas, so you're trying to like make a painting, right? That's part of the whole experience, is you're making art, and when you're done you have a piece of art that you've made, so that's really cool, and that's been a pretty positive piece of the feedback from people playing it. And so I ran only two times, and then later that night it was probably 11 o'clock or not or something. And someone from the Unpub staff that I know came up to me and said, like, oh, like, you have a game about Mondrian? And I was like, oh, yeah. He's like, it was really weird because I saw this other person walking around with this piece of art, and I was like, why do you have a piece of Mondrian art? Why are you walking around with this? And he's like, this is so weird. And the person was like, oh, well, because it's a game, and I just made it. And he's like, what do you mean you just made it? And he's like, that's what we did. And he's like, that is so, like, so cool or whatever. And I was like, yeah. And then so how it works is I was just showing him a thing. I'm like, you basically, like, have to draw rectangles, and like there's colors, and then in sizes like 3x1 or 4x2 or something, and then there's red, blue, yellow, and white. And I said, and then like there's three stacks, and you have to just draw one of the pairs, and then you flip them down. He's like, oh, so just like Welcome to. And I'm like, yeah, it's exactly the same kind of system for like picking what you do. And he was just like, of course, that makes perfect sense. And he's like, I want to play it. And so it was just like an interesting thing that like that avenue of like the artifact of the gameplay. Yeah. And like cause other conversations about it and people to do it. And like that's always been my goal with that one, is that like it's as much as the experience of making the art as it is playing the game and who wins in the scoring system. And so it was really cool for someone who had no knowledge about that in any way, like reacting to it that way. And like, I want to play it, like, and so I'm going to send a copy home with him so he can play with his family and his kids, and they can make art too. So that was a really, cool. really neat experience to see that happen.
That's awesome.
One highlight for me was I was walking around the floor looking for something to test, and I saw somebody was pitching a semi-cooperative game where you are playing as hackers against capitalists or corporations, and I just about screamed my head off. I had to hunt him down. I had to take his business card and find his slot, but I managed to test it, and I'm looking forward to seeing that game polish and develop more, because I really love it when I see more multi-victor games out in the world, especially ones that are anti-capitalistic.
I'm going to break my own rules and sort of talk about two. So one was, I did a panel, which was like the first time I've done a panel.
Yeah,
I did it
there.
With Tony.
It was great. I was there.
It went really well. We had lots of audience participation, and it wasn't like such a huge room that it felt like it felt like I knew a lot of people in the room and stuff like that. So that was just very fun. It was on recurring game design problems, and I think Tony and I didn't have the answers to any of them, and that was totally fine. But there were lots of people like sort of cross-talking in the audience of like, check out this game, or I've done this, right? Which was just a cool conversation. I think the other thing that I was excited about, there's a game here, there's two new game designers have a game called Medic, which is all about combat medicine, right? And so it's out of the sort of, I mean, it's in a war context, right? But it's all about triage and how do you treat battlefield wounds. And this is a user community that I've worked with in my day job, and I'm interested in the idea that they're trying to bring the sort of what does medicine look like in these contexts to games, and they're really coming at it from a, they want to teach people about that, right? And so I don't think they're aiming for like take it to the war game market, right? It feels like they're aiming for some of like the firefighting games that we're seeing, or like pandemic, right? Something that's sure. that's a little bit more educational, but digging in from their specific background, because one of them is a doctor and one of them is a combat medic. And so that was just I was excited to see them here, right? It's their first game. They've been working on it since, I think they said October, right? And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Dave, we'll go to you. Also, we just had a late ad, so that person will introduce themselves after Dave goes and tell us their favorite meeple color when they play a game.
Just seeing everybody and being around everybody is always such a highlight, and it's probably honestly my favorite part of doing these things. But in terms of like specific like sort of programming and gaming highlights, I also was on my first panel physically. Like I've done stuff online, but and it was with Zoe and Matthew. And we talked about playtesting online, And being a part of online playtesting communities. Unfortunately, it was at the same time as...
I know. I didn't get to go to your panel.
I really wanted to go to your panel, but the timing didn't work out. We were supporting you through the wall.
Yes.
And, well, I guess it was a wall and a room and then another wall.
We were sending our vibes across that empty room.
And we felt that. We felt the vibes. It was really cool. And I was actually kind of surprised not only how many people showed up, but, like, how receptive people were to what we were showing them. Like,
they were very engaged.
They were so engaged, and I think there's as you know, I think a thing that Matthew and I both feel as organizers and, like, leaders of an online playtesting communities, encouraging people to explore different options for how they playtest online, specifically with, like, the tools they're using. It feels a lot of times like it's an uphill battle, and people are so, like, ingrained with, like, what they're used to using that they're not open to those ideas. But then you get in a physical space with people, and, like, it's really actually not that hard to to show people other stuff and, like, get them on board with another system. Like, they were into it, like, right away. They needed very little convincing. It was just really cool, and I got a little distracted by what just happened.
We had someone come in to say hi, and we're like, we're recording him, so if you hear us whispering,
sorry, folks. But yeah, it was really fun to be a part of that and just see the enthusiasm about, like, how to incorporate online playtesting into your, like, designing process.
Nice. Yeah, I felt like people were really engaged in the panels, which mm-hmm. was very exciting. Mm-hmm. All right, you want to introduce yourself and favorite meeple color?
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Tony Tran. I just walked in. I woke up kind of late and slept in a little bit. My favorite meeple color is white, but usually as a backup, I'll do yellow or blue in that order. A lot of games use white. The question was...
Yeah, all right. So the question is, what was your goal for Unpub, or why you came to Unpub, and then a highlight from Unpub of an experience or a moment or something like that?
I've been wanting to come to Unpub for years, and it's always been hyped up, and everyone's like, oh, I'm so excited to come. Now I just, like, take time away from work so I can come, and timing just worked out this year. That being said, it's been so busy, I haven't really thought about what I wanted to get out of Unpub. I think it's the reason why I've been struggling to organize my feelings and thoughts about my experience I've been here. Obviously, like, there's a follow-up, like, to play test, and then to see people I've been interacting with online and talk to people again that I regularly see, like you guys, which has been fantastic. Which, as far as a highlight goes, I think for me, unfortunately, all the highlights were, like, in the first hour of Unpub, and everything after that is kind of, like, downhill. Mm. So we did the panel together, Emily, and that was fantastic. A lot of people showed up, a lot more people than I thought. I thought it was, like, two people were going to show up, and it was a little better than that. They actually uploaded our talk on YouTube.
Oh, man.
And it was, like, on the front page of Unpub for a little bit.
Oh, but man. They recorded them?
Yeah.
We had two cameras. Yeah. We knew ours was being recorded. Yeah. If you didn't have a camera in the aisle.
I don't think yours was recorded. Tam did it, and he did ask.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and we were at the same time, so maybe there's only one set of recording.
It's only one at a time.
We probably don't need to have the how to online. Well, actually, it would.
What I mean to say is that since they didn't record you, I don't get to watch yours. So I wanted to, but at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was that I had a few people say I was recommended to them for development work, which was kind of wild. And that and the panel was literally all within the first hour. And after that, I spent some time outside of Unpub. With significant other and a friend. Got some playtesting in. Playtesting hasn't been... Actually, I'm just telling myself. I'm totally getting off topic.
That's all right.
I think one of the highlights actually was playing Roscoe's game, Roscoe and Clarence's game, in this very room. And it's... I've always wanted to play a game that was like, oh, am I it? Am I the one? Mm-hmm. I know some people have been chasing that. And I think that it was a very good execution of it. I think it has good legs. So I was very happy I got to play it.
Nice.
Yeah, awesome. I'm going to relay one thing. This isn't really a highlight for me, but I think it's an interesting story. And I don't know if everyone's heard this. But there's a person named Elijah that found out about Unpub a week ago. And they live in South Africa. And... him and his group, I don't know the whole situation, but this is a story that Ben was saying, so I just want to share it with the audience because I think it's really, really cool. They're making a game about finance, about how to teach people in their communities about how to like responsibly use money and things like that. So they're really trying, it's a very educational kind of game. So with like 4 days' notice, he flew from South Africa to Baltimore to come to his first Unpub to like network people and play test and like learn as much as he could. And I just think that's like an amazing, amazing story of like people trying to connect and like make change in the world using games. And that's like super amazing to me, and super like exciting. So I just wanted to share that story. It's not my highlight, but it's just like an amazing thing to hear. So
yeah, we did we offered Elijah some time at our building the game table, so he's gonna be down there at 10 today.
Awesome.
Playing that game. Not that anyone listening to this podcast can go check it out, because it will be out in a week.
Unless you have a time machine.
Sorry. Yeah. All right, so a bunch of us playtested. I think everyone was playtesting our game. So any cool insights about a game that you playtested this week, one of your games, something you got out of this playtesting?
Yeah, I mean, I accidentally jumped the gun on this question, but the tests I had that had kids in them were so interesting, because Tears is specifically, I'm shooting for, like, entryway that you can play with a family. And in both of those games, the adults were wanting something more complicated, and the kids were like, yes, this is it. It's done. I love this. And that felt like really good information. Like, it's hitting right where I want it to go. And then, actually, like, Tony, the playtest you were in, you had one of the people you were with. She said she'd never played a game before. And, like, Tears was, like, maybe her first board game?
It was her first actual like board game outside of like mass market, like,
yeah,
Monopoly and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it seemed like that went really well. So like, it feels like it's doing the thing I want it to do. And getting insights from those people, first of all, is a thing that like, it feels like this is exactly what this event is for. Is like getting those unusual tests that are really hard to get in, like, going to your game shop or going to a con, like a PAX or something like that, or Origins, like, because the people who tend to be at those things are like, they're either in the design room, they tend to be a lot of designers, so, or online communities, they're a lot of designers, so tapping into that audience and getting their feedback is so, so helpful. Yeah, I think those were probably, in a way, those were my most helpful tests of the weekend.
I can go. I think I had two sort of interesting insights. So one, I'm playtesting a new drafting mechanism for Knitting Circle, which actually involves a rondelle and pawns. And I was like coming to Unpub, and I was like, I just need some meeples or something. And because I have good kitties with me, I have cat minis, right? And so I just threw those down. And it has unlocked this whole like imagination where people are like, we are cats and we're hopping over each other and we're playing with this yarn and we're batting it off the table. And it's like, totally unintentional. Like, I could have just put meeples, but I had cats on me. And actually, one of the goals that we've had has been figuring out how to bring cats into the game. And so I was like, oh, well, there you go. Maybe we, like, have it. And it sort of has opened a whole new, like, line of thought of, like, okay, then if you're cats, do you have, like, cat player powers, right? Where some of you are zoomy and others are good at knocking things off. And I don't know, right? It was just, it was unexpected and just a little moment of joy.
And is this just a branded spinoff from Good Kitties? Is it the cats from Good
right,
Kitties?
Right, we're in the Good Kitties universe now. Yeah. This has always been the plan, is the Good Kitties cinematic universe.
Well, they're trying to take over the world, even when their game's not being played.
Via board games. I think the other thing is with Pirates, I really got a chance to, I'm working on the action selection, and really want to get those choices interesting, and so I was able to just, I had a little piece of paper, and each playtest I sort of changed the number on three of the spaces, and so just really getting a chance to like hone in on that and like make us swap two of them and then try it again was really useful.
I think what you said, like what you just experienced with Knitting Circle, is a really good example that's like a counter to the advice people often give of like, don't go too high fidelity in your prototypes, don't use like specific like components and things, but like you unlocked potential new things by not doing that,
right?
By like actually using a specific thing. So I think there is value in occasionally like making a custom thing, or like if you're able to do it, like you can find new options and avenues by like doing something like that. So that's cool that happened.
Yeah, even putting some different stock art on it, right?
Yeah.
You know, go find some other random. It's not cats anymore. It's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Eagles. I don't know.
So I had like a bit of an epiphany during my unguided playtest. Sometimes I would have these, specifically talking about Conviction, my couples quarrels game. Sometimes I would have a test and people were kind of like getting into the mood of the game, like bickering and then getting to the conclusion and like being like, oh, well, it totally makes sense that we broke up because we couldn't see eye to eye on anything. And they basically had the intended experience, but they like botched some like critical rules in the game. And so like, I'm like taking down notes like, okay, they didn't do this right, they didn't do this right. But like, I had like a couple playtests like that. I was like, wait. But they're having the intended experience. They may not be following the rules perfectly, but they're having the intended experience. Maybe I'm like focusing too much on the mechanical minutia and like overlooking the fact that my game is actually working, kind of, maybe. I'm still going to try to polish it so that there's less of that friction, but like, I was getting lost in the weeds. And that was my biggest insight.
So I think the biggest insight for me, and I'll speak on behalf of Clarence, this social deduction game that Tony was talking about a little bit and that I mentioned before, we had been playing it a lot. We played it a game a bunch of times, and a lot of the testing we did there with people who were super hardcore played every social deduction game there is in the world. And some of the bigger groups we played in the first couple groups, we had some people in the playtest that were less people who maybe don't even really like social deduction or like dabbled in it. Like they played one or two, but like it's not necessarily their thing. And the one twist in this game is in most social deduction game, you're given a roll card. So you're an A and you do B to win. And so you have that, like it's a secret, but you have that like a little bit of a guidance thing. And so in this robot game, one of the twists is you kind of don't know what you are. You don't have complete information about your role. And so the thing we saw, the insight there is that if you're a hardcore person, those people have really enjoyed that part of the puzzle of like figuring out that thing of what you are. And some of the people who kind of like maybe are in a shallower part of that genre, they needed a little bit more. They wanted like it felt a little unsettling, and that's okay. That's what we want, emotionally want, but it felt a little too unsettling where they didn't know how to proceed. And so it was a good insight to see that, like, player expectations in, you know, on ramping and things like that that we have to consider of, like, how a random group is going to get this game and they're going to play it for the first time and how's it going to go, right? And so, like, there's going to be variants there of this group plays Avalon every week, and so, and they have been for 5 years, so, like, they're going to go one way. And then someone else who buys it, who, like, the last time they did a social deduction game was in college and this looked cool and they bought it and, like, they're going to try it and, like, how do we make sure that they have a great experience too? And so that's something that, like, we've been spending a lot of time thinking about. How do we make sure that, like, both groups will have a great experience and really enjoy the game? So it's good to think about audience. And I think that's one thing to slightly, like, piggyback on what David was saying. Like, compared to, like, some of the Protospiel and other things would do tend to be heavier gamer things. Unpub, part of it is, yes, there's a lot of that here, but there's also, like, just total people who are, like, off the street public who, there was, like, a lacrosse team or something that was in the lobby and they were walking around playing games too. And so, like, you don't know kind of, like, what kind of playtesters you're going to get. And it's great to get that kind of, like, less gamery person who's not your family, right? Because if you go to a game store, again, they're gamery. And so, like, you get some people who are, like, just like, but hey, sure, I'll try something or whatever, and you see. So, like, I think that's a great mix of thing and why some people really enjoy coming to Unpub for the testing of, like, that separate group. Random people who are like games and they're kind of interested, but, like, they're not super hardcore into the hobby, but they just like to have fun experiences, so.
I think one thing I intuited that's both kind of double-edged sword, in the debrief, Brian was kind enough to let me set up the game on his table. And in the debrief, one of the highlights for him was when we're playing a two-player game and you have to use all five players because you're building a city in the middle of the table and it has to build up to a certain level. So yeah, it's quickly automate all the others. And Brian's comment was that some of the most fun he had was when the non-player characters were automating, which is like, okay, that's good that's fun, but also that's not good that's the most fun. I try not to evaluate. You were talking about maybe processing feedback, like, to the whole process. For me, it's like, I'm going to have this in my brain and, like, let my brain work on it, and I'll think about it again in, like, 3 days from now. I could easily digress on this topic a lot, but maybe another intuition was that the game continues to, foot traffic always stops, and it's always just like, one person said, that's cheating, because I have my little light lighting it up, and I got, someone wrote down their email address, so now I have to start an email list. I've got the one person, so I'll write my newsletter or something and send it to this person, so look forward to that person.
the hardest difficulty of success. I think one thing I brought quilted, rethemed it to a pastry to go theme for Unpub, and I think it worked pretty well. But one thing I wanted to try was something like a pseudo catch up mechanic for the leader, which is unusual in the game. It ended up working quite well, which I was quite happy about. But I think the thing I want to talk about was, like David, you're talking about, like, polish for the game. Mm-hmm. And I just included a scoring sheet at the end, upgrade the components. And with those two things together, it felt like a completed game, like something in a box. And it was such a mundane feeling. It wasn't exciting. It wasn't like, oh my God, this is life-altering for the game, even though the game is, like, already pretty much done. But it just made it come all together, and I was like, okay, this felt right, this felt good. And then when I went home yesterday after Unpub, I was talking about it with my significant other, and she was like, yeah, you know, it's not exciting because you've solved the problem already that the game was presenting. And that's what the feeling I was having. I was like, this isn't exciting because I played it so many times and the game is quote unquote done. So I've been trying to reflect on that for the past, like, 2 hours I've been awake. I think that's my insight.
Yeah, that game is excellent. Like, yeah. for folks. I don't. What's it called now?
Do you Pastries have to Go.
Pastries to Go.
I might end up self-publishing it.
It's so good. It's so good and so clean. And when I judged it for Cardboard Edison last year, like it was one of the few that I played where like it felt very, very close to done. And you had only been working on it for like a month or something. Like when you submitted it, like it was
less.
Yeah, even less. Like it was a tight game. So
thank you, David.
Glad to hear that's going well.
I also, that game was, I think, like the first game that I played in the first time I went to the Game Makers Guild, like mm-hmm. playtesting. Mm-hmm. I just remember it. I remember early on in my GMG journey playing this game, and I was like, this is a cool game.
I set the bar for myself way too high. I showed you my worst games.
All right, so I think we've all played our games a lot this weekend, but we've also played other people's games. So what are your favorite games that you played of someone else's?
I can go.
All right, Robbie.
I was just walking around and jumped on a game by Randy Ryman. Now I'm going to blank on what it's called. No, Royal Watch. Did anybody play Royal Watch?
I saw it.
It's just a little cooperative game, and he makes a little clock around the table with 12 positions, and you've got a task to do, and as you go around the clock, you're going to pick up a couple more tasks, and as you play cards, you play symbols to the castles to satisfy the tasks, but if you play the same color or number of the card, you can back up the clock so you can give yourself more time, and we played through it once and failed, and I said, shuffle up and deal it again, let's go. And it was one of these things where I'm asking him, I'm intuiting like what I'm about to do, here's what I'm about to do, and this is what I think it should. And he's like, yes, that's exactly right. And I'm like, that'd be lovely to like design a game where people are playing it and intuiting it, and what they're intuiting is exactly how it works. And it was really cool, and we had some neat moments where things cascaded and fantastic, you know, what a fun little thing. It's times like that where I'm like, I do need to get in that space eventually of trying to make a game that just is small and intuitive and quick, and someday I'll try to explore that, but anyway, another digression. Fantastic game.
I feel like I played a bunch of games, but I think the one that sticks in mind is, again, Roscoe's game. I've been playing a lot of Social Deduction, and I think my highlight of it was that I am an unusually confident individual, and the person sitting next to me, I was on a good team, and the person next to me was a good team, but I was so confident like in round two that they misconstrued it as me being evil and hard selling it. And it was a 7-round game, and then up to six rounds in, me and her had the table completely 100% convinced of the win condition. And then the last moment, she was like, no, Tony's too confident. No one is this confident in real life after just meeting them. And apparently it's a character flaw.
It's a life lesson right there.
Yes, and then everyone at the table turned against me and then voted I was evil. And I somehow picked the correct evil person. And that, they got 1 out of 7 votes, and I got 4 out of 7, so I got majority, and I ended up losing because of it. And it was just like an amazing turnaround moment, and that's that kind of feeling you can't bottle in like in any other genre. And I just very it's a very it was a very memorable moment, almost as memorable as Tears of Joy.
I thought we were going to avoid it.
No, it's a thing.
Also, Tears of Joy.
Oh my god. So I think like favorite, I'm going to break the rule a little bit, but favorite game that I've played before that I got to play again was probably Emily LaRoche's Ardish. Haven't played it for a few years because I think she kind of paused working on it for a bit. But it was really nice to have a look at that again and see how clean that design is and how it kind of surprises you and reveals itself over the course of playing it. Favorite game that was new to me was probably Matthew Hawker's, I think it's called Introvert at a Party. There's a decent amount of work that still needs to be done on it, but it was by far the most unique and compelling thing I played this weekend. Like, the concept and system that's underneath it is so fascinating, and it will work. It will get to a point where it's, like, really flying and working. So I think I'm most excited to come back to that and see what it's doing when it's, like, clicking and really working, because I see the game. And then favorite game that I haven't played yet but had a very good pitch and discussion on was Roscoe's one that I don't know the title of, but the city construction game.
Oh, Megacity.
Megacity. So clear what this thing is doing and exactly the kind of thing that I want to play. And it sounds like there's a screen top version, yep. And you can solo it. I can't wait to check that out. It looks exactly like the kind of thing that I would just, like, make myself a cup of coffee and run over and over and over again. I'm really excited to check that out.
Nice. Well, I was going to mention Sick Ink just because it was very fun to draw on my friends. And when I drew my first tattoo, Zach was like, so do you have an art background? Because I feel like you may have drawn a tattoo that's a very good tattoo, but really hard for anyone to comprehend. But she got it. It was Emily and Emily. We did a great job. But I think the game I wanted to highlight was Back to the Present by Catherine Stipple. And so this is a game of rescuing time travelers who screwed up. And it's played with just a regular deck of cards. And so you're trying to get, like, the kings and the queens and the jacks, the face cards, out and rescued. And you have your phone up set to a clock in, like, military time. And so in order to manipulate things, it's a two-player game. I'm not describing it well. I'm sure Catherine would do a much better pitch. But you are basically trying to set the cards on the table such that they match the time on your clock. Like, the actual time, because you can only do certain things at that matching time. Like, you can only rescue the time travelers when your seconds are correct, or your minutes are correct, or your hours are correct. And so there are these really fun moments of, like, you know, we have 17 seconds until we hit the number. We've set it to 42, and we're somewhere in the 20s, and we're just watching the seconds tick by on the clock so that we can simultaneously place our king cards in order to rescue them. And then there's, like, pulling cards off of the deck and then shoving them back on to try and move time forward and backwards. And it just, I cannot describe it, but it is really fun. It's very clever using this deck of cards. But also has these fascinating, like, hurry-up moments, right? And these other moments of, like, we've set it to 8 a.m. and we're playing at 10 o'clock at night. How are we possibly going to wind the clock to, like, you know, the right time? And we managed to do it and rescue the time travelers. But it was very cool, and I'm excited to see what else Catherine's working on.
I already mentioned Access. That game is by Drew Hicks. That's the semi-cooperative, anti-capitalist one. I want to instead mention Between by Gene Koo. That game is a game where you're all different personalities of, like, a 12-year-old girl, like, trying to navigate life and the overwhelming pressures of, like, social pressures and, like, personal goals that you have to contend with, and how much, like, basically how much spoons you commit to it. And I think it's his first attempt at, like, a board game instead of, like, a TTRPG, but I can always see a lot of promise in, like, the execution of it, like, if things were, like, streamlined and a bit more concise. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops. I'm cheating. I'm doing three of them because I had played Matthew Hucker's Introverts at a Party before. I helped inspire the theme for that game because I was like, this feels like an introvert. I'm also similarly jazzed for that game, especially because I love the concept of a game that could be played, like, entirely in hands, like, no table. And that game almost has that potential. There's still a discard area, but yeah. Excited for it. Okay. No, I'm done. I'm sorry.
No worries. It gave me time to think, so that's why I was like, go the other way, because like, I have to like congeal my thoughts here. I'm a little bit all over the place. I just want to follow up to what Emily was saying about Catherine's game. Like, yesterday afternoon, that's all I heard anybody talking about. Like, people are like, you got to see this, like, you know, trying to, like, help set up pitches. Like, she wasn't even here to pitch it. Like, and people are like, you should pitch this. And they were dragging publishers over. So, like, it's obviously something special. So I'm going to hope I can run her down today and try it. Because, like, I definitely wanted to, like, the buzz last night, and I didn't even know how it was played. I'm like, something's happening here. I need to go find out what it is.
I caught her this morning, and I told her, I'm like, we're playing your game today.
Yes.
And we just have to find her. She doesn't have a block.
So yeah, but I think, well, yeah. Yeah. People are, like, lining up to do it, so... Yeah. Super excited for her. If people don't know who she is, she also designed Nyctophobia, so that's a touch point there. So, yeah, that one maybe won't be my favorite one. We'll see how that goes. but, I mean, it's time travel, so I need a time travel machine to go back and have played it already. Yeah, so I think one of the more interesting ones I played was this one by Chris Metivier, who's from North Carolina. And a good friend of mine, and it's this kind of Euro-style game, and you're kind of playing as, like, these, like, spirits or gods or whatever, and it's animal-themed, and you're trying to, like, migrate animals to your part of the forest, so, like, you kind of have, like, as these different spirits, you have different areas that you're kind of controlling, and so the thing is, though, it's a unique worker placement thing where you collect these animals. There's like five types of animals, like squirrels and beavers and whatever, and they have unique abilities, but you have to collect them, and then you have to deploy them. But when you deploy them, they're not yours. You're just deploying them to the forest. And then you have to later use other abilities to migrate them to your area or to attract them essentially to your area. But there's other things that people can use to move them around. And so, like, it's a kind of like, it's a little bit of a spatial puzzle, even though it's not like kind of like visually spatial. It's like, where could things go and like, where are they at? But the rule set is pretty simple. And so he's been trying to like kind of streamline it a little bit. And so we talked a little bit about that for a couple things. But like, I'm really, really excited to see him finish that up. There's a couple of like scoring twists he needs to make, I think, that we talked through that he's pretty in agreement with, so I'm not trying to like tell him how to make his game. I think we talked through some things, but it's a really unique twist how you kind of do a couple things. And so, yeah, that whole kind of like, you have to put stuff out in order to try to set up to attract it to your side, but other people have the ability to move it in the meantime. And so you're trying to like look for that, like you have a strategy, but you're looking for those tactical windows to just jump in and like grab this one or grab that one, and you don't know if it's going to work out. And so you're like, it's really, really kind of fun, but like very, very kind of small brain space to kind of play in. So it was really cool.
I'm just going to jump in because I think we started with you, right, Robbie? Yeah. There, if we're talking games we have not yet played but are excited about, this morning I'm going to go find the designer, and I've forgotten her name, who has brought a game about periods and being on a period.
Yeah.
And there's something about blood and pain and pads.
Yeah, I think
and
it's like a trick-taking game or trick-taking adjacent.
Yeah, there's four
suits.
And those
are the suits.
Yeah. I am here for this. I am finding it this morning. I feel strongly that this game needs to exist in the world. Right?
I really want to play that too. And there's somebody made like a fashion like paper doll dress up game that I really want to play too. Oh, there's too much to get into.
The period game has a block this morning from 10 to 2. So that's on my agenda.
Did you see the other co-op cat game?
I haven't seen. I saw her playing it. Yeah. I haven't played it. And I apologize. I actually don't know their pronouns.
Sorry.
Apologies. But no, I saw them playing with Matthew Hawker and didn't get a chance to to jump in. So see if I can catch Vicky.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So last question, always a question. I'll be interested in the answer on this. Any favorite foods from this convention? We're at a new hotel this year. We're not at the Horse Hotel. RIP.
All right.
Horse Hotel. So the food situation is a little different.
honestly, this hotel is way nicer. And the food options are way better. But I've only had one real meal so far this trip, and that was when we went to UPC Pizza, yeah. Which actually had, like, really, oh, I almost said a swear, a really good vegan pizza, like a deep dish vegan pizza. It's probably one of the best vegan pizzas I've had. It was like a fake chicken parmesan, fake chicken with fake parmesan on fake dough is a fake pizza, but it was really good.
It's a real pizza, right?
It was, I did eat it. It was a fake
pizza. Yeah, I'll go next. So right across the street, From the hotel where everything's at is a place called Poppy's Tacos, and their food is amazing. I ended up there twice. Wednesday night I came down to help set up, and so I went over and had some queso fundido, and that was really great. And then like some people wanted to go for tacos Friday maybe or something. I don't know what day it is anymore or what year. we went over there and had tacos, and like. They have these burrito bowls and all the stuff's like super really really good, and the portions are nice and not too pricey. But the funny thing about it is, like most kind of like Mexican style food, you can like you have whatever you can add, like, you know, chicken or whatever or chorizo or these different things, carnitas. And it's funny, they have like a little bit of a joke on it where like they don't call it hamburger, so if you just want like seasoned beef, they call it gringo meat. So like, there's basically like, and if you want like the typical like tacos with like lettuce, cheese, tomatoes, you know, kind of like more American style, that's also called gringo style. So if you order a very Americanized version of it, you're going to be saying the word gringo a lot in your order, which is also just kind of funny. But the food was absolutely amazing. So cool. If it's here next year, like, definitely check that place out. The food is great. It's a great value, too.
My answer to that question is just no.
Yeah.
There's a place across the street. It's a beer and food place. And I did have a delicious Delirium Nocturnum. And then I got some steak tacos. But the steak was actually really well cooked. But the fillings, whatever, it's not worth talking about. Yeah.
If you remember from PAX Unplugged, I'm a big food person. Kind of cheated. I'm not staying at the hotel. I'm staying in downtown Baltimore. And my friend took us to her favorite place in Baltimore. It was like a 5-star restaurant. It was like a very expensive restaurant. And it was Syrian food. And the food was phenomenal. Everything was amazing. And there was a celebrity there as well, which I won't mention. But it was an overall great experience. So.
You're right, I was there. Sorry. That's didn't like that either.
Mine's same as Zoe's. The UPC pizza place was really, really good. Yeah, I would definitely get that again if we're back here next year.
We have a late ad. All right, so you are going to give your name, your favorite meeple color, why you came to Unpub, a highlight, favorite game you played, the favorite food you ate.
This is a reprise of the PAX U appearance.
Let me run through this. Repeat really it. Quick. All right. So Matthew Hawker, I've got his play testing. This game that had an hourglass, it was pretty cool. It was new to me, but otherwise all the classics that I love. And then a highlight, driving to Wegmans and getting in there like 15 minutes before it closed, and like also buying way too many apples. favorite food that I ate at the convention, the 4 tiny hard boiled eggs from Wegmans at 11:45 at night. An insight from a play test. People don't read the words sometimes, and then they go, "Where are the words?" And I go, "Uh-oh."
That's it. Those are all my notes. Oh, I thought my favorite game.
Oh, okay, great.
I don't know. Did you play Back to the Present or Sick Ink? Those were just my favorite games that I listed. Matthew's reading my notes for them.
I'm wondering, should this just be the format of the podcast?
Did this happen last time?
I tried to sleep then, but I didn't. Yeah. But I then tried to go back to sleep, but then I didn't. So now.
Yeah. Well, is there any? Oh, go ahead.
I have an objection, because you said you bought too many apples, but I've almost eaten all of the apples. It was just the right amount of apples.
How many apples were there? Like 15?
It was like Six hours.
Yeah. That's not a lot of episodes.
One person, maybe.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about Unpub in your? Because we're doing the final.
No, I think I covered everything. I summed it all up pretty nicely.
Well, we're glad to have you. And you guys had a BMG table too, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right, I'll do my favorite food. I did not make it to the taco place. I instead went to the place two doors down from it, the Pasta Mista, which was good, right? I was very proud of myself that this year I had some full meals. I had a dinner in the restaurant. I cannot recommend the breakfast in the restaurant, but I will find something for breakfast today and it will be good. I just had a really satisfying spaghetti and meatballs experience, and that was great, and it tided me through the rest of the afternoon, so would recommend. Better than last year, where I was like, does anyone have any cookies? So
here's an almond.
Yeah, right? We've got four almonds. All right, so where can folks reach you?
I'm Zoe, and you can find all my stuff at knifebunny.com, like a knife and a bunny.com. I've got my Blue Sky on there, I got my Mastodon, I got my YouTube, it's all there, email, everybody loves email, here to Europe.
I'm just at Roscoe Shock, Twitter, Blue Sky, or Discord.
Robbie Bergstrom on Blue Sky, and apparently I now have a mailing list. I've got that one person. Got one on it, so yeah, shoot me. I can add you to that. You get the newsletter that never comes out.
It's Tony Tran on Blue Sky and on Discord.
Yeah, David Masnado on Blue Sky, and I'm in a bunch of different Discord servers as well.
I'm on Discord. You'll find me. It's fine.
All my socials are up on pinkhawkgames.com, or you can find me on Discord or Blue Sky at Emily Keeps Kitties Instagram as well. And if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can email us at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com, or you can check out buildingthegamepodcast.com, which will link you to the Discord, because you should definitely come join the awesome Discord community. But the best way to keep up with us is to keep coming back every single week. And until then, good night.
Goodbye.
Good morning.
Good day.
Goodbye.
Good day, sir.
See ya.
Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. The end of the episode, that's
when it technically ends.